Hi, this is Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book, coming to you from Tan Talk Radio Network's headquarters here in glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. Oh, wow. This is getting exciting. March is coming up, and of course, it's going to be March Madness here at Joy on Paper because it's going to be the anniversary, the fifth anniversary of Joy on Paper. So it's really exciting, and I have so many wonderful authors who are going to be coming to join me to celebrate this occasion, but I tell you, I was just blown away when on Saturday I got a call from Martha Grimes. Now, Martha Grimes is a mystery writer of America Grandmaster, and it is so thrilling when you get on your telephone, and she's now on my caller ID, so I can look at my caller ID, and I see Martha Grimes called me on a Saturday, and she is going to be a guest here on Tuesday, and that is really exciting. She is such a fantastic author. She's really a legend in the mystery writing world. And so it was just an honor that she even called me on the telephone, let alone that she's going to be here on Joy on Paper on Tuesday. So I am really excited. And of course, the actual day of the anniversary is the 17th of March, which is St. Patrick's Day. And 5 years ago when I started the program, it was also St. Patrick's Day. So it turned out to be a very, very lucky day for me. And so I'm excited that Tasha Alexander and Andrew Grant, AKA now Andrew Child, will be joining me to celebrate that day. But today I'm just so thrilled. You know, all of you authors out there, if I ask an author who do they want to meet? They all want to meet a literary agent. So it is really exciting for me to welcome to Joy on Paper, Caitlin Johnson from right here. You know, we have an agent here in not too far away from me, Sharon Bell Castro. And so welcome to Joy on Paper, Caitlin.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me, Patsy.
Wow, this is fun. You know, I always tell authors that literary agents are worth their weight in gold. So you know, and it is true. It is so wonderful for an author to get a literary agent. And when I was thinking of all the jobs in the world that are really fun, being a literary agent has to be right up there because you get to do something that you love. You read books.
Exactly. Lots and lots of books.
Lots and lots of books. So tell us something about you. Tell us something about how you joined Sharon. Sharon, of course, had been on the program before, and I met her at BoucherCon here 2 years ago when we had it here in St. Petersburg. So tell us a little bit about yourself.
Sure. I met Sharon at a couple conferences, and we chatted, and we really liked each other, and I was at a different agency at the time, and so we got to talking, and basically we decided we wanted to kind of branch out the agency, and she was looking for somebody with middle grade and YA experience, and I kind of just fell in with them really easily. They're a great group. They are incredibly fun, as everyone who's listened to her knows. So we just kind of happened, and it was a nice little happy coincidence.
Well, she is fun. I must admit, I know she's told you this. We met at the bar. You know, we were at the Vinoy Hotel, and there was all panels and conferences and meetings and stuff. And then you get to a point where you've had a lot of that, and you decide you need a drink. So there she was sitting in one corner of the bar, and I sat down, and you know, I said, yeah, she looks interesting, because at that point I had talked like to a zillion people, but I thought one more person, and I was so happy that I talked to her. And I think sometimes friends you make at bars can last a lifetime.
Oh, definitely. You meet the most interesting people.
Absolutely. Wow. So, you know, and of course, she works out of near here, near where I am, broadcasting from Clearwater, Florida. And so I get to see her once in a while, which is fun. And you're stationed off in Orlando, right?
Yes, Orlando.
Well, you know, it's nice that nowadays everybody doesn't have to be in New York City. you know, to be a literary agent. You know, there was a time when everybody had to live there, but it's nice that you can branch out and be across the country.
Yeah, it's definitely nice to be able to afford living. I will say that.
Yes. So, you know, how did you get into the business? How did you start? And did you expect that you were going to be a literary agent, or did it just sort of happen?
I didn't. It kind of happened. I really wanted to be an editor. I'm super nerdy. Love grammar, love line editing, all that kind of stuff. So I went to Emerson College to study stuff like that in publications, and I interned for Corvisiero Agency, and it just kind of stuck. It's the best of both worlds. It's reading and editing, kind of having a say in what's coming out on the shelves coming up, what goes to those editors. So I found out that I kind of liked being that in that middleman kind of thing. And so I kind of just worked my way up. I went from intern to apprentice to associate agent and then to literary agent. So it took some time, but I just kind of built my way up and made some sales, and I'm absolutely loving it. I love that one-on-one kind of feel with the author and finding new works that, you know, have never been on shelves but deserve to be on shelves. So I really like that my life kind of tangented over to a different path than I was really thinking.
Now, of course, you are you're as you mentioned, you like middle grade and a young adult. How do you find how do you find people, or people find you?
People find me most often. I try to like do things like this, where I reach out and talk, so people can kind of get to know me a little bit, so they're not just, you know, shooting in the dark. But a lot of people find me just on the Bel Castro website. I use Query Manager, so it's this kind of foolproof form people just fill out. And I take middle grade YA and adult. I take quite a lot of stuff. And I go to conferences. I'm such a Twitter person. People can go on there and just see me, you know, talking all the time, showing pictures of my cats most often. It's pretty much my writing partners here. So I'm pretty vocal. I try to say a lot in the community so that people can feel like they actually know something about me instead of just a face on a website.
Now, who are some of the authors that you've discovered?
Yeah, I work with Z.R. Allure. He's being published next year with Macmillan. And Rebecca Thorne is being published with Jollyfish Press this year. Actually, her cover just got revealed on Twitter and is fabulous, The Secrets of Star Whales. We just announced a deal today, which I'm so excited, with Little Brown for Jamie Berry, whose middle grade is going to be published. So those are three of the big deals that they're coming out. Nothing's been out just yet, not on shelves, but they are going to be, and I'm very excited for them.
So how many query letters do you get a week?
A week? I would say probably around, like, somewhere between 50 and 100. And it depends if it's, like, conference or contest season, then that definitely rockets up a bit. And I know I'm on the low end. A lot of agents I know get, like, 100 every couple days.
And I was going to say, you're relatively young and starting off, but there are agents who get 100 a day, and they are it's rather overwhelming, and
very much.
Now, you know, I've spoken to some of the older agents, you know, people who were in the business before internet and before Amazon, and they actually had, you know, they got query letters written Some of them, you know, were telling me, you know, sometimes they'd get like just a piece of paper, you know, a line paper, school notebook paper. But a lot of people, of course, would make a big effort to, you know, buy the most expensive paper they could and really work on trying to make it look, you know, really nice. But you don't get that. Everything you get now is on the internet, right? You get email.
Oh, yeah. Definitely no snail mail. I can't even fathom trying to tell somebody's handwriting at this point. We definitely get only things through email. It's just a lot easier and just clearer and faster communication.
Yeah. So it was, I tell you what, it was so funny in the old days. Now, I was a scriptwriter, so I wasn't doing query letters, but I had friends who were doing query letters. And I had a girlfriend who, I mean, she spent her entire like weeks choosing the right paper. Should it be ivory? Should it be this? Should it be, you know, and everything. And working on when things were typed on a Selectric typewriter. I don't know if you're old enough to know what that is, but those are typewriters where, you know, the letters each have a certain space. So it was really... really an art to type a perfect letter with a Selectric. And I think she must have like written, I don't know how many times, a query letters over and over because she wanted it to be perfect. Because one has heard that literary agents can be very picky.
Yes, unfortunately, that is definitely the case sometimes. I mean, we try to give feedback. We try to, you know, give it its just moments, go look at their stuff. But yeah, it is kind of a, you got to hook them right off the bat.
And I, you know, having that experience with her, and eventually she did, I won't tell you, she did get her books published. But the thing is, she went through a lot of nervous energy doing this. But now, of course, people sit down and they put it in an email. Now, when you get these query letters, you know, how many words do you want?
I usually don't do a word count. I just say as long as it fits on one page, that's good for me. If it gets onto the second page, you're definitely making it too long. I usually say it's like 4 to 5 smaller paragraphs, like nothing too detailed, basically. We want solid details, but we don't want you to ramble.
And does the headline... that's important to you, that grabs you the most?
That'll depend, because I'm lucky I get to be query manager, so you just fill out a form and there's not really a headline. It just shows me the, you know, the title, word count, and the genres and stuff like that. If you're sending an email to an agent, the headlines just read something like query, title, and then like the age category and genre. I think they want it pretty formulated just so that they can know exactly what they're going to be getting into when they open it. It doesn't have to be catchy or anything like that, because we're still going to be doing the exact same thing we do with a different query.
So let's say you get 100 in a week. How many of those would you then, what do you ask for in the query letter? You simply want them to hook you and tell a little bit about themselves, right? About the book.
Yeah.
And then what's the next process? What do you do? Do you... what do you do first? Let's get rid of the rejections. What do you do with rejections? Do you actually answer back so that people aren't sort of hanging around?
I do. I try to answer every query. Luckily, Query Manager is really nice in that we can make templates. So we can click on a template for why we're passing and then put our personal feedback in real quick and then send it off. I ask for the query synopsis and first 5 pages because I'm a big synopsis person. Again, I am a nerd, so I love seeing that because it does help me figure things out about the plot progression. And for whenever I pass, I usually try to give some feedback. I try to give a line or so about why I'm passing, so it's not too generic. Sometimes it's a form email, you know, if I've had a lot that week or I'm trying to get through a lot or it's really just something that's not for me and I don't have specific feedback. But most of the time I feel like agents, if we have the time, we're giving you something to go on. Even form rejections, I feel like, have a little bit of something to push you in the right direction.
Yeah, and I think it's polite. Really, I talk to so many writers, and they are many of them are still under the impression that they can only submit to one literary agent at a time.
And oh,
so,
Lord, no.
Yes, and when people will come to me and say, well, you know, it's not polite, I say, forget polite, honey. Send it out. And they say, well, what if I get 2 people or 3 people or 4? I say, yeah, let's hope so. Let's have an auction here somewhere.
Right? You know, you get a pick of the litter there.
I said, don't worry about that. Well, you know, then, you know, will I get a bad reputation if I reject somebody? I said, listen, if you've gotten an offer right there, your reputation has gone up way, way high, right?
Exactly. Like, it's about the career. It's like we ask that they don't send to more than one agent at the same agency. Yes, because we don't want to compete against each other. But they should definitely be sending it out to multiple agents. And if they get multiple offers, then they can decide who's the best fit for them. Because at the end of the day, they shouldn't worry about, upsetting other agents. They need to pick who's right for their career and their book.
And I just had this conversation last week with somebody. I said, and this person really is a very sweet person. A guy, he's really sweet. And he said, well, you know, if I get two offers and then I tell the one that, you know, I rejected her offer, what should I do? I would make her feel bad. I said, no, she'll be happy. She'll be happy. Of course, and if it turns into a bestseller, she'll hit herself on the head for the rest of her life, you know, like those ones who rejected J.K. Rowling, right?
Yes, yes. We definitely run into that. Like, we're sad we missed out on it, but we're happy for the author for getting a book out that we believed in.
Exactly. Agents are wonderful, but you don't have to be that careful with them because they have thick skins because you have to, because I am sure that there are times when, I mean, well, we know there were, 17 or 18 agents who rejected J.K. Rowling. And
yeah.
I think... they really rejected her. And I always thought it would be sort of nice. Somebody should do a television show and invite all of them just to come on, you know, and at least pay them to come on the program.
Be like, what was your reaction when you realized what you did?
Yeah. I mean, it's sort of, you know, in this nowadays where they like this reality television, seeing people, you know, suffer and ache in front of them. I think that, is that cruel of me to think that's a nice idea? Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, we definitely talk about it amongst ourselves on the things we've missed out on.
Yeah. So, okay. So we get, this is why I really was so excited to be able to talk to you, because I can get a lot out of you. You know, I'll tell you, some of the older agents, and I'm talking the ones who have been in it for 30 or 40 years, they're like hesitant to say anything. Hey, here, you're just telling us what we need to know, because, okay. So we've somebody sent you this form, you've read this form, they've had four or five paragraphs to grab you. Is there any one particular thing that would grab you?
I love just seeing what's unique about the story, because, I mean, so many stories are kind of inspired by or drawing off of something we've already seen, because, you know, you can only have so many original stories. So I love to see what's unique about yours, what's going to pull it off the shelf and make it stand out. Otherwise, it's just going to sound like every other story I've read.
Now, do you like if somebody makes a comparison and says, like, this is a combination of The Grapes of Wrath and Jack Reacher? I don't know, something crazy like
that. Oh, God, that would be a very interesting comparison.
Yeah.
Some agents really put a lot of stock in comparison titles. I don't. I'd like to see them. Like, they're fun to see, but it's a double-edged sword, because a lot of people will put something like, it's Harry Potter meets Lord of the Rings, and I'm like, there are a million things in those books you could be referring to. They, like, pick the big blockbuster titles, and a lot of the times it doesn't actually apply to their book, they just want it to. So I don't put too much stock in them. I really like to see just the pitch itself and to see what is unique about it and what draws me in. Comparison titles are great, but I'm not going to like say yes or no because of them.
Okay, because and I'm going to be celebrating the 5th anniversary of Joy on Paper all of March. So over this time, you know, I've gone to a lot of writers' meetings. I've met a lot of, you know, people who have been dreaming about writing, and then the people who get to the query level point, and they're all like, spend a lot of time trying to compare their book to something. And I say, yeah, that, I don't think that's as important as just getting across exactly what you said, what the story is about. But then the next thing they worry about is, do you care if they've self-published before? This often is a big thing nowadays with people. Many people have, like, they self-publish a book and then they come and write another book, and they now feel that they're ready for an agent.
Yeah, I mean, if it's not the same book, because I've had people who have self-published a certain book and then query me with the exact same book, and I have to be like, well, it's self-published. Unless it's got, like, millions and millions of views and sales, most likely a publisher's not going to get that because it's already been out in the market. But if you come with me with a new book, I'm much more likely to take that on. I don't think self-publishing in the past is going to hurt you at all. I love hybrid authors. And it doesn't really reflect your talent of now, technically, because you've grown as a writer since you've probably published that book. So this is a completely new thing. If it had really, really bad sales, you may want to consider taking it off, but that's totally your opinion and your decision. I don't look at that, really. I look at the book that's in front of me.
Okay, and so now you've looked at the query part, and now you look at the synopsis. How long do you want a synopsis?
So always check the submission guidelines, because some agents I've talked to, they're like, oh, we'll take like a 4-page one, and I'm like, I don't understand how your eyes are not falling out of your head. I always say if it can fit on one page, awesome. If it can fit on 2 pages, it should be double-spaced, just because like our eyes hurt after a long time. So I say 1 page double-spaced or 2 pages, 1 page single-spaced, 2 pages double-spaced, and no longer. Because if it's going to be longer than that, it kind of looks like you don't know how to condense your storyline to the important bits or the highlights, basically.
Okay. Well, see, now right there, that's very clear. I will tell you, I had a very famous agent on, and I kept trying to say, would you please tell us how long? And he's an absolute doll and a sweetheart. But he said, oh, well, whatever they feel they need. I don't care. And I thought, I think you actually do. But, you know, because I've seen and you know, I absolutely tell people not to do this. Don't send me any of your stuff because I can't do anything with it. I can't, you know, people will send a synopsis to me and they'll say, oh, could you pass it on to a literary agent? And, you know, I can't do that. So I've seen quite a few, and, you know, some are so detailed that it's like they've written an additional novella to explain
right?
the novel.
Like, that's just too much. We want to know the nitty-gritty. Like, I'm a big synopsis person, like I said, so I've actually done a lot of, like, conference sessions on it, and I teach about it. I'm going to be teaching about the synopsis at the Muse Conference in April, actually. And so people freak out about it, and I'm like, you don't have to freak out. It's okay. Take a breath. It can be, like, this dry document that just gives us the beginning, middle, and end, and a little bit on how they connect. It can be super... It's a spoiler document, is what I always say. Because people think they have to tell every little bit. They have to tell all the subplots and all the characters, and you really don't have to do that.
That's exactly what I've been telling people, because when I have gotten some of these things that are really so long, and I don't have the time either, I'm thinking, I don't think an agent is going to do it. So that's just wonderful advice. Okay, so now you get there, but... Now you have the first five. How many pages do you want of the book?
I usually ask for the first five.
The first five. Whew. Okay, so everybody's... and you know, and there are so many authors that, well, they think they can't, that they have more time. But in fact, those five pages are so important. And I know I've talked to David Baldacci so many times, and I one of the things I always tell him is I say, you know... I start your book and I know, you know, that it's going to be great just from those first five pages. Well, usually with Baldacci, I think it takes maybe 2 pages, and I know that's a great book.
Yeah, it's wonderful when a writer can do that. It shows that they have that talent. And sometimes if the pages are really good and the query was like subpar, we'll still request it because we really like their voice. And we're like, well, maybe they're just not great at writing a pitch, which is fine. That's kind of what I'm for. So if the pages are fantastic, you could still definitely get requests on that. A lot of people say, you know, you can't tell in the first 5 pages. I'm like, but I can. I can definitely tell if you have certain abilities as a writer, if you're not quite there yet, if you know basic grammar and punctuation, all that fun stuff. Or if you know how to begin your book, because the beginning's the hardest. It really is one of the hardest parts. It changes like 5 times. And even if I then represent you, I may change the beginning up on you again.
So you are active. Once you accept a book, how much time do you spend? I mean, do you tell the author changes that need to be made, suggestions for rearranging things? How deeply do you go into it?
I go pretty deep. I'm really editorial. I just kind of can't help myself. I don't feel like we can let the book go to a publisher until I feel like it's at that place. So normally when they have chosen me as their representation, I go through the book again and I leave comments in the actual text and I give them like this big reader report, or we'll get on the phone or a video together and we'll talk it out and I'll give them what needs to be focused on. So then they'll go and do their edits, then they'll bring it back to me, then I'll read it again. Hopefully we decide to do like track changes so I don't have to read the entire book again, because that writer's going to be waiting a while then. And I'll do line edits then, because, you know, I love line edits. I'm a glutton, apparently.
Yeah.
So we'll go back and forth until we feel like it's ready. Normally, it doesn't take more than two or three passes, because we usually try to take things on that are pretty near ready, like that we know we can sell, or we know that is almost at that finish line, unless we really, really love a book. And then we're like, okay, here's all the in-depth edits, and it's going to take a while. But I like to get really into it with the author, because, I mean, it's their work and it's kind of a reflection on their career coming up. So we want to make it as good as possible.
Well, and I'm glad you mentioned editing, because one of the things, you know, I get a lot of books, and like you, I read a great deal. And I do think it's so important, although, you know, you want the book to be grammatically correct when you submit it. There's a point where nowadays I'm afraid that a lot of people are just using grammar programs as the end all and be all. That if I run it through a grammar program and it doesn't come out with anything wrong, the book's okay. But
definitely not the case.
It's not the case. There is nothing to replace a human editor. I don't care what AI they create, what robot they create, your job is safe, because it's a human. From somebody like, you know, you and me, we've read so much, we have this sort of natural ability to say, yeah, that's the right flow. And it's not something that can be fixed by somebody running it through a grammar program that tells them, well, you can use this word or this word or this word. The words have to come from the heart of the author and not from some grammar program.
Yeah, and programs can really strip you of your voice, because it's going to say, oh, this is a fragment, you shouldn't use that. But certain voices, it works like that. That's how you're writing it. That's the character. That's the slang or something like that. And it also won't tell you if, you know, you're using the right, sometimes it won't say if you're using the right, say, there, or there. It'll be like, oh, that's spelled correctly, but it doesn't go to the sentence level and check if you're using the right one. So there's a lot of ways that it can trip up and not give you exactly what you need, and it can sometimes hinder you. I still say run it through a program just in case for those little bits, but still definitely edit yourself, have some critique partners who can look it over for you. Don't just, like, the end-all be-all is your computer.
Exactly. Now, you mentioned April. You're going to be where?
I'm going to be in Boston for the Muse and the Marketplace Conference.
And what is that? Explain what that is and what you're going to be doing there.
It's a very big conference that's held every year in Boston by Grub Street, which is kind of like the community. It's like a writing center with classes and a wonderful staff. I actually used to work for them when I went to school in Boston. So I go back every year I can. It's amazing. And I'm going to be teaching about the synopsis. I have two sessions on that. And there's basically half of the conference is dedicated to classes on the craft and learning how, like, different ways of writing, different tools you can use. And the other half is the marketplace, which learns about publishing, traditional self, hybrid, all that kind of stuff, contracts that go into it. So it's split in between, so writers can get, like, a really good grounding on both sides of their career.
Okay, now explain to my listeners, what type of books are you looking for?
I'm looking for specifically fiction. I don't work with nonfiction. I'm also not really into like mystery, thriller, suspense kind of things, but stuff like middle grade YA and adult, where it's like fantasy, contemporary. I really want something like a rom-com. I'm in love with historical, dying for more historical all the time. and definitely looking for a lot more that's now in, like, the LGBT and mental health issues and physical disabilities and stuff like that. I'm trying to build my list on a lot of those.
And you like fantasy?
I love fantasy.
And like, if somebody comes along like Leigh Bardugo, you'd be a happy camper?
Oh, Lord, yes. That would just make my day.
She is so wonderful. I just love her work. And I was thinking, you know, well, the agent who came along and found her, because, you know, it's out there. And again, a very happy agent. So you're always looking for that author who is really going to propel your career and, you know, and reach so many readers. It's exciting as an agent for you to know that you brought somebody to so many people, isn't it?
Exactly. Yeah, it's amazing that we can bring that person's message or that person's world to such a large audience. And I mean, yes, the dream is that we find that big breakout writer. But again, we're not, I mean, if you're agenting, you're probably not here for the money, because it's definitely either a hit or miss there. But it's great if you do get that one person, because also it could help propel the rest of your writers as well, because you're known as the agent who agented that person. So it is fantastic to find someone like that, as it can like be a full circle helping effect. And if not, you just love the group you've got and do everything you can for them.
And the wonderful thing is you have a wonderful job. It's the kind of job that you enjoy all of your life. It's an ongoing job. And you can keep doing it, too, until you're 97 years old.
So, exactly. There's not really a retiring plan here.
Exactly.
You can read as long as your eyes go.
And that's it. So where do people contact you? How do they?
I have a contact form for my query manager on belcastroagency.com. For my profile, they just click on it and it takes them to the query manager.
Okay. And, you know, I just want to tell everybody that Sharon Belcastro is just a wonderful person. She's so great. I just love her. And again, you can go to the Belcastro Agency website and you can find out more about, you know, what other books that you have. I know I've had quite a few of your authors on, like Christine Blum. I love her. She sends me wonderful little gifts. She's a fantastic author, and I'm always looking for people to come on my program. So make sure you contact me whenever you have an author whose book is coming out. You send it to me, and I'll have them here on their release date, because that's what I love to do. I think it's so much fun. I just love also to encourage authors and to help them, you know, reach my listeners and just to become fans of reading and of the people who are behind the books. That's one of the things I like to do. That Caitlin Johnson, I think you're fantastic, and I think you've given a lot of information here to my listeners, so they will be very happy that you were on Joy on Paper today.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I had a great time.
Okay. Bye-bye now, and I'll have you back, okay?
Awesome.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Okay. She's so sweet. Wow. And you can go right there to the belcastroagency.com and click on her picture there. She's got a nice picture. And submit your story to her. And you have all the form there to do that. We're going to have a commercial break, and then I'm coming back. I have a wonderful book I'm going to be talking about. Honeybees!
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Have you ever faced disaster? The Red Cross is always there for you. The Red Cross responds to a call for help every 8 seconds. They have never turned anyone down. Now they need your financial support so that they can be ready to help you when the need arises. Donate online at redcross.org. Thank you.
Are you an author? An artist? An inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
Do you dread being called on to speak at meetings or family functions? Have you envied those who can sway an audience with well-chosen words? Do you know that people who speak well earn more money, earn more recording careers? Gain the confidence to master any speaking situation. Toastmasters will allow you to find your voice. Go to toastmasters.org to locate the club nearest you.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
This is Patsy with a Z, and I am back. In a few minutes, I'm going to be talking to two authors. They've written this book. It's an absolutely beautiful book called The Honeybee, and it's really exciting. You know, when I get these books that are so beautiful, and I just love to just, picture books with lovely little stories alongside are just wonderful to read. And this particular book about bees, I know that it's something that I've been interested in because my brother has bees. So we'll be talking to them in a minute. But meanwhile, again, I want to remind you that if you're interested in hearing some of the archived interviews, you can go to my webpage, radio-joyonpaper.com, and I have so many of the interviews that I have had with various authors. Over this 5 years, I have spoken to 9 Mystery Writer of America Grandmasters, and that has been so much fun, and many of their interviews are up. Also interviews with famous people like Sonia Richards Ross, who won the Olympic gold medal in London. So all you have to do is go click on radio-joyonpaper, and you can listen to some of these interviews because they are fun and they're interesting, and you'll learn a lot about the story behind the books, because isn't it fun to know about how a book came about, how the idea popped into somebody's head. This is one of the wonderful things about writing. You never know what's going to interest you, what's going to intrigue you. And then one day you just start writing. And when you start writing, and this is the beginning of the year, if you start writing today, by the end of the year, you're going to have a book. Or even if you don't start writing, if you start doing the research, you'll have a book. So now I'm so happy to welcome to Joy on Paper Candace Fleming and Eric Roman, and they have written a book called Honeybee, The Busy Life of the Apis mellifera. Did I pronounce that right? Yes.
Good. Your Latin is impeccable.
Okay. I hope so, because I loved my Latin teacher. She was the best. She was my favorite teacher. I loved her. I think I don't know what I would have done in high school if I hadn't had her. I kept studying Latin more than anything simply because she was so delightful.
So, I had a great one too, Mr. Miggy. He was awesome.
Yeah. Isn't it wonderful how good teachers can make an impression. I won't talk about my third grade teacher who made me sit on my hand because I was left-handed.
Oh,
it's sinister. I've been thinking of writing a horror book about her.
Now
we have to talk about this absolutely gorgeous book. It's, it's an oversized book, and it's so beautiful. The photos are gorgeous. And all that you've written alongside the pictures, it's a fascinating book.
Well, thank you so much.
But let me tell you that we did use, when I made the illustrations, I used, of course, I mean, how do I know what a honeybee looks like, right? I did use a lot of photographs, but they're actually oil paintings. in the book. And I use photo sources all the time because, you know, like I said, honeybees are really small and they don't like to pose for you.
You know.
So I used, you know, you used lots of, and that's one of the great things about the internet these days, is that you can use those sources.
It is a gorgeous book.
Thank you.
Wonderful production value. The paintings are fantastic, and I have a particular interest in honeybees because my brother, who had been a VP of a major company, and his wife, who had been a VP of a major company, they retired and decided to become organic farmers.
They keep bees in their farm.
When they did it and they decided to go back to the farm, which my brother had last seen when he was 2 years old, they didn't know anything about farming. But they took classes at the local agricultural school and they started raising bees because... So what's your fascination with bees? How did this come about?
We're fascinated with bees. I think it started with this whole bit, you know, upmost in our mind was sort of that, the plight of the honeybee, that they've been placed on an endangered species list, and hives are vanishing, and in some places 90% of their population has disappeared. And scientists are still struggling to figure out what is the cause of that. But we wanted to share that with readers, young readers, but... Eric and I both recognize that giving young readers some grim statistics, right, and a bunch of facts about honeybees was not going to be enough, that if we wanted our readers to actually take some action on behalf of honeybees, that we needed them to care for them first, because as everyone knows, action requires empathy. So instead of focusing on the plight of the honeybee, we decided we would focus on the gloriousness of the honeybee, the magnificent life that she has from the day that she's born to the day that she takes her last flight and dies. And in the case of Apis mellifera, our Apis, in this one book, we follow her one life. She only lasts 35 days. Wild bees in the wild in the summertime, they have a very short life. They work themselves very hard, but it's a very short, beautiful, I think, poignant life.
And as you said, these are oil paintings, and when people look at them, they'll say, I think half of them looking at this book is, did somebody really paint this? I mean, really, they are absolutely fantastic. It's, you feel the little furry parts, the way the wings, you can see through the wings, everything is just perfect in this book.
Yeah, and you know, this is the weird thing about when you're making pictures, is you want them to be realistic. You want them to be naturalistic. You want them to look like the things they are. But you have to ask yourself, how far are you willing to go, and how far do you need to go? Because I didn't want to make them look like clinical, you know, almost like scientific illustrations. I also wanted them to have them to be lively as well. And the way you do that is you apply some paint. And if it's wrong, you wipe it away, and then you apply more paint. And so I always say that I'm not as much a creator as I am a discoverer. And so I paint and look and paint and look, and eventually, after, how long was that, about 8 months, I had the 17 paintings.
Wow.
They are, I have to say, they are, this book is the first honeybee book, at least for children, that has realistic paintings of honeybees in them. Other books have not, instead of chosen to draw the honeybee, it's sort of that honeybee, that Honey Nut Cheerio sort of look, cartoony bees. And after Eric got into the project, he suddenly realized why everybody chooses to draw the bee like the Honey Nut Cheerio bee, because they're tough creatures.
Who knew they were so hairy?
Yeah,
exactly.
See these tiny little brushes to do these tiny little, each individual little hair on these bees. So, we made that discovery too later.
And
at a little too late of a juncture, but I think it worked out well.
It worked out beautifully. The text flows so nicely. It is just ideal for reading aloud to children.
Thank you.
And, well, thanks. I think all adults will just enjoy this book. This is the kind of book people should get and just, you know, put it on their coffee table, and everybody who comes over to the house will pick it up. And as I said, because the words are just so beautifully done, and there's a story in here, and so that, you know, most people don't think, you know, that a bee might visit 30,000 flowers. That's a lot of flowers,
right.
You know.
That's a lot.
The thing about that Candy does so well in writing nonfiction is she realizes that, not unlike fiction, the important thing is the storytelling. And that you don't have to, you know, make things up. You don't have to, you know, my bee doesn't have to have, you know, like a shirt on or something to relate to the audience that's reading it. That there's a story to be told here, that's a series of fascinating events that also have some emotional resonance.
Mm-hmm. And exactly, and as we get to the end of the story and we read that how much nectar she's collected and
right.
Just so little, but she's done such a great job, and it's so beautiful. I think the story
is
beautiful.
It's courageous, isn't it?
It is.
500 miles, 30,000 flowers, and she's collected enough nectar to make 1/12 of a teaspoon of honey. I mean, it's a courageous little life.
I mean, I didn't expect reading a story about a bee that by the end of the book I would have tears in my eyes. And I thought,
and you know what? This is a terrible thing to say, but the fact that we made you cry really sort of makes me a little happy. And you're not alone. Not too long ago, I read it to a group of third graders at a Christian school in Houston, and the third graders, they got a little teary too. And the next day, they had a school-wide chapel in the morning, and they took prayers requests from the student body, and it was the third graders who raised their hand and asked that the whole school pray for honeybees. I thought that's so great,
yeah.
Because they cared. Yeah,
it was unexpected. I'll tell you, it was unexpected. When I was reading, I read children's books out loud, because I think that's important. That's how you tell if a book is good for a child, if
yeah.
the reader can read it and it flows and it has this flow. And so I'm into the story, and I'm reading this, and I'm learning about things that, exactly, a brushy body and bristly legs and all of this that you bring in. And it is, Candy, you've really done a wonderful job with the text. And then when I get to the end of the book and I got tears in my eyes, and even as I look at it now, I just, you know, this, it's emotional. And so I think you both have done a great job with this book. And I just want to mention to my listeners, the book, of course, is available wherever books are sold. I'm sure Barnes Noble has it. And, of course, it's on Amazon and online. But, Candace, briefly, let's just say something about you. You've written children's books, The Family Romanov.
Right, yeah.
Which was
she also has a brand new biography of Charles Lindbergh,
right.
Called The Rise and Fall of Charles Lindbergh, that just came out. So obviously she writes, she did a book about Amelia Earhart too, so she writes about things that fly.
I like flyers.
Candy, Candy, then I will tell you right now, I have to have you back, because my husband is a pilot. And
oh.
I love anything about flying. So
yeah,
so,
I knew we had that in common. I love the flying things.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay. So definitely, I'll have you back. And Eric, well, you're amazing. That's all I can say. It's just unbelievable an illustrator.
You know, you could just stop right there. You're amazing.
No, absolutely. And I want to tell you both that I'd like to actually, I'll have you back. I'll arrange with it with you. You have a website that you want people to go to?
CandiceFleming.com or EricRoman.com.
Okay, and then perhaps you could talk about Strongheart, Wonder Dog of the Silver Screen.
Yes, we would love to. It's a wonderful story from a golden age of Hollywood.
I love Wonder Dog.
he was a wonder dog.
Exactly. Okay. Well, it's nice. I always like when I have authors who are going to come back to Joy on Paper. Okay.
We will.
Okay. Again, thank you, everybody. Get this book. It's a wonderful gift for children. A wonderful gift just to put on your coffee table. And the two of you have done just a perfect book. And it's Candace Fleming and Eric Roman, and it's called Honeybee. Busy life. Okay. Okay. Thank you so much for joining me today on Joy on Paper. It's been a joy.
Thank you.
Okay. Bye bye now. Wow. It is a beautiful, beautiful book. You know, a book like this can really open a child's eyes. So if you have any child in your life, this is an ideal book to get them, because it covers so many things. First of all, as I said, Candy's words are so touching. And the story, she writes the story. You learn all about a honeybee just from the words that go along with Eric's beautiful paintings. And you will look at this book and you'll say, did somebody really paint this? It took me quite a while to realize, because as you know, I get a book, I open it up, I start reading, and at first I'm thinking, how did he get these photographs? And then to realize that he's painted every little hair on this tiny bee, and it's actually quite amazing. And I hope that you will get it. It's really beautiful. Wow, they did a fantastic job. And they're going to come back, because we have to talk about Wonder Dog. I think that's a wonderful thing to do. And meanwhile, again, I want to thank Bill Larson of Larson & Larson so much for his support of Joy on Paper during these past years. And also, you know, it's just if you have any intellectual property questions, please check him out at Larson & Larson, because so many of you are falling for things on the internet when they send you and they ask you to submit your book to Hollywood so that they can turn it into a major motion picture. That's not the way it's done. I am telling you, that's not the way it's done. You know, just listen to me, okay? Because remember, one of the joys of life is to see your words on paper or to hear them spoken in an audible book. Or if you're very, very lucky, to hear those words, lights, camera, action, and your book will be turned into a major motion picture. But not until it's been absolutely perfectly copyrighted and set, and the contract has been read by Bill Larson of Larson Larson. So please be careful out there. Don't fall for these things, and just start writing, and you never know, in a year from now, you might have a book, and you might be here on Joy on Paper in time for my 6th anniversary. Meanwhile, say something nice to somebody today, and I will say something nice to Big Ed in the control room. Thank you, Ed, for everything, and I appreciate you, and you're just wonderful. And that's it for today. Everybody have an absolute wonderful weekend. Bye-bye.